Hot new drama is coming to Disney Plus.
5, 6, 7, 8.
When lives are at stake.
I have a pulse.
We gotta move fast.
Hearts are racing.
I love you, and I'm gonna love you.
And family is everything.
All right, team. We work side by side.
New drama can't wait. Set a reminder to stream the latest seasons of Grey's Anatomy and 9-1-1.
Welcome back.
And the new series, Dr. Odyssey.
Brace for impact.
Exclusively on Disney Plus. Streaming this October from $4.99 a month, 18 plus subscription required.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Hey everyone, it's Dan from Entrepreneur, and let me ask you a question. How many billion-dollar franchises do you oversee? I'm going to do a quick count in my head, and I've got none. But today's guest has one, and this being right before Halloween, I thought it was a perfect time to speak with the business brains behind one of the most successful and goriest franchises of all time, The Walking Dead. David Alpert is the co-founder and CEO of Skybound, which is the home of The Walking Dead, and many other titles like Invincible, comic book nerds, you ever hear that one? He built a company with Walking Dead's legendary comic book creator, Robert Kirkman, who began this comic book series 21 years ago. That's right. The Walking Dead is finally old enough to drink. Enough for me talking. Let's talk to you. How's it going, DA?
It's going great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Awesome. Great to talk to you. You guys oversee. And we've got some incredible, mind-blowing stats about it and its success. But before we do that, for those listeners who maybe were a little too squeamish to watch or maybe they didn't read the books, can you give people a sense of what the Walking Dead universe is?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Walking Dead, in its the simplest thing, it's a story of the zombie apocalypse, right? So this is what happens. And basically the interesting innovation, because there's been plenty of zombie stories before The Walking Dead, was the way that Robert, my partner and the creator of The Walking Dead, pitched me the idea, which is what happens when the zombie movie ends, right? So if you look at all zombie movies, kind of end one of two ways, right? Either everybody dies, or people get away and they escape their town or their village or their city where the zombies had been. But you still now live in a world where there's zombies, right? Like, like people have come up out of the ground and started eating you. Like, your life is different. You don't just go back and like go to the baseball game. So he wanted to tell the story of like what happens after that and sort of what the world is like from there. And I think, so a lot of people are like, oh, I don't like horror, I don't like zombies. And I think the magic of what made The Walking Dead The Walking Dead was the fact that at its heart, it was a soap opera, right? Yeah. It really was. I mean, if you take away all the zombies, the initial arc of what the story was a man wakes up in a coma, goes to try to find his wife and his son, and finds that his wife is taken up with his best friend, and she's pregnant, and he's not sure if the baby is his. So that's, I mean, you know, that's as soapy as it gets.
And, right.
You know, that was really, really fun.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I mean, anyone who's listening to that description, you could see how many things that have come since The Walking Dead that this has influenced. Because obviously there's a lot of influence on like, how do these people live on, and Walking Dead, stuck its flag in the ground on that one. Back when this show started, one of the favorite things for fans to do was talk about the inventive ways that people's heads were exploding. Do you have a particular favorite death scene that really you were like, whoa?
I mean, there are so many moments. Well, I mean, what's funny is there's two ways to answer that. The first way is there's a few scenes that are just so gross. There's the walker that gets trapped in the well, and then you start trying to pull it out, and it's sort of like just a like explodes with guts and gore. And so that would be my sort of my go-to response. And that was in the early seasons. But it's funny if you watch it with the sound or without. The sound does such amazing work and make you grossed out. If you watch it without the sound, you're just like, huh, that's weird. But then you watch it with the sound, you're like, oh, don't do that. Like, it's really, it's amazing how that works.
That's so awesome. So there's been many seasons of this show and many like iterations of it, which I love to talk to. But overall, you know, just to get into some of these stats. So the show launches 13 years ago. It was the most watched basic cable TV show in history. And right. Now, as we're in the realm of streaming, it has logged 1.3 billion viewing hours on Netflix. And that's from a study that I guess was conducted last year. So we got to assume that it's more than that. But that's billion viewing hours. That is incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the thing that was crazy for us to find out, because I've known the show is popular. I've been all over the world, you know, seeing the fans, engaging with the fans and seeing the fandom. But I had thought, like many people, that the show had sort of, you know, maybe past its prime, gotten long in the tooth. But when we found out that last year we were the number three show on Netflix globally, that was like, wow, that's insane. And what we've discovered is that there was a whole generation of people that were maybe like too young at the time, right? Or they were, you know, they were in a busy period of their life and they sort of got behind and missed it, that are now being like, oh yeah, that thing that I heard about, they're catching up and they're binging it like crazy. Yeah. And that's been the thing I think is really driving sort of this amazing resurgence and interest in The Walking Dead.
I think that's such a great lesson to anyone who has something creative or maybe even not creative. You know, we forget that, you know, it's new to somebody. You know, you may have been living with this thing. You might have done it 10 years ago or whatever it might be. But as you just said, people grow up. They missed it when they were a kid, and now here they are ready to go. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, my son came home the other day and asked me if I ever heard of this new band called Led Zeppelin. And he's like, yeah, I've heard of them. He's like, they're really good. I'm like, yeah, they're pretty good.
That is fantastic. That is great. Well, I was telling some of the younger staffers here a little while ago that I was interviewing the lead singer of Jane's Addiction. That's a whole other story. But just when I said the words Jane's Addiction, just the complete blank stares on her face, like, who or what is that a girl? Like, who is that? It was just makes you feel young when no one knows what you're talking about. So, yeah, you mentioned so you guys are just behind Grey's Anatomy and Suits. So we got a crossover potential there. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, first of all, Grey's Anatomy is easy, right? I mean, like, there's definitely an autopsy to be done somewhere here. Right. Figure out, have someone die on the table, come back to life, attack the hospital. I mean, I think it writes itself. You know, Suits can get a little harder, but, you know, I think, you know, zombies chasing Meghan Markle would sell. Like, I think it'd be really, really interested in seeing that happen. Or seeing Meghan Markle zombie. Like, I think there's plenty of ways we can go.
There's so many ways. Let's get Meghan's people on the phone right after this. We'll make it happen. That's so great. So, and obviously, you know, this isn't just a TV show. It isn't just a comic book. Gaming is huge. I'm looking at this, over $1 billion in gaming alone. Not too bad.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we do at Skybound is we don't think about the medium as being the purpose, right? It's really about building a content, a story that you want to immerse yourself in. So it started as a comic because that's an area for us that we love, and we love comics. TV obviously makes sense, but, you know, people then were like, hey man, like I love this world. Like, I don't want to just be passive. I want to engage in it.
Right.
So we did everything from, you know, before the pandemic, we had a cruise that we used to do every year that would sell out in about 30 minutes. We used to do a tour where we would rent ballparks all across the country and do sort of like an interactive, immersive.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty great. Oh, and people would pay to be survivors and like run the obstacle course. and other people would pay to be zombies and chase them. So there's sort of like something for everybody to do. We also did, we created sort of, we did a Waking Dead coffee, so somebody would help you in the morning. And we did Walking Dead wine and bourbon. So it was sort of like a perfect cycle. The more wine and bourbon you drank at night, the more Waking Dead coffee you needed. The perfect virtuous cycle. But we literally, you know, we really listened to our fans. And Robert really was there sort of like gatekeeping the brand. But we did everything that he felt was authentic, but that the fans wanted. So we made everything from samurai swords, guitars, baby onesies, you know, really sort of got after it, which was a ton of fun. And then gaming, though, has been sort of one of our main areas where people really want to immerse themselves in this world. And, you know, our first game was one of the Telltales of Walking Dead, an interactive narrative game. And that was just a massive, massive hit, both, you know, for us critically and commercially.
Now, were there any product ideas that you or Robert were pitched and you were just like, no, we just cannot do that?
Like so many. so many. A few of them, you know, so for one reason, I still don't know. For whatever reason, Robert never wanted to do the ice cream. We got pitch ice cream, and he's just like, I just don't really believe there's going to be freezers in The Walking Dead, in the world of The Walking Dead. I'm like, I mean, somewhere, someone's got a generator, like, you know.
Yeah.
Someone's running that. Yeah, he didn't like it. He didn't want that. And
brain freeze.
Right? I mean, come on. He didn't like that. But the other thing he was really strong about was no weapons. He really didn't want anybody specifically getting hurt with Walking Dead. We got pitched a lot of targets and things like that. And,
oh, okay.
You know, and like I get that, and so that was something that we sort of did. But there's also a lot of cannabis stuff that we didn't end up doing. So right. We're like, people could be zombies on their own. They don't need our help.
What happens on a Walking Dead cruise? That one is hard to imagine what that was like.
So it was kind of like a mini convention, right?
Oh, okay.
So you would have everything from. You'd be able to get like made up as a zombie. Like we'd have makeup artists on to get you there. We'd bring actors from the show to come in and sort of like meet and greets. We would have trivia contests. We would have all sorts of different themed events around it. But it was really just a chance to sort of engage in your fandom and meet a lot of people who were into it. There's a lot of collecting and trading of all the different collectibles we make, everything from the comic book and the art to a lot of show memorabilia was being bought and sold. Right. So it was just really people that were just so passionate about their fandom. And the best part for us was it was one, just a celebration of engagement, right? Just how much people were love this world. But then we were there and we were asking them, like, what do you want? What is it that you want that we're not giving you? Like, where do you want to go? And they were the ones that pushed us into some of those products that, you know, I never would have thought that a Walking Dead wine would sell millions and millions of bottles. But they're like, no. They said to us, we want it. We want a wine, but it can't be a logo slap. And we're like, huh, like, how do you, I don't know how you do that. So we came up with this idea where we basically made an app that basically you put it on front of the, you put your phone in front of the bottle and a zombie would jump out and like break your lens. But if you bought the second bottle, then Rick would jump out and fight the zombie. And so each bottle had its own little story that sort of added to the storyline. And we would have people in the supermarkets, like there would be like these crowds of people gathered around the bottles. And then people would start filming other people, filming the bottles. And it really became this viral sensation.
That is so awesome. And, you know, again, to extrapolate from what you guys did to really any business, asking your customers, your fans, what do you want? And then listening to what they say, what a valuable lesson for anyone to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I really believe that our engagement with our fans, like we really think of them. I know community is this word that gets bandied about and overused, but we really sort of engage with our fans. We talk with our fans. We have done crowdfunding, so we actually have thousands of our fans that own a piece of our company. We've partnered with them. So we really want to, and we hold meetings and AMAs and all different formats to engage where we say, hey, look, like, our success is your success, right? So if you guys don't like what we're doing, we're not going to be successful. So how can we engage? And it's not like we rely on them only. Right?
Yeah.
We have Robert and great creators that we work with, but it's very important for us that they feel like they have a voice at the table. And to have a voice, you have to listen, right? Like, it's not just enough to have a place to say something. You have to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. Send your thoughts to an inbox no one will ever look at.
This is an ad for BetterHelp. Welcome to the world. Please read your personal owner's manual thoroughly. In it, you'll find simple instructions for how to interact with your fellow human beings and how to find happiness and peace of mind. Thank you, and have a nice life.
Unfortunately, life doesn't come with an owner's manual. That's why there's BetterHelp Online Therapy. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more. That's betterhelp.com.
You know, the dark side of fandom has I'm curious about your thoughts about this. Variety just did this story about the problems some studios are facing with the toxic fans, you know, when that dissatisfaction, you know, goes over the top and it's not just about like the movie or show. And they said that there's one studio that's going to use a group of dedicated super fans to review marketing materials for big franchise products to gauge how the larger fan base might react. What are your thoughts on that? Is that a good idea?
I have so many thoughts on this, right? On the one hand, I am a super fan of a lot of things, right? Not just the stuff that we do, but I'm a super fan of everything from comics shows. There's a couple bourbon brands, a couple other things I follow very intensely. And I'm vocal about sort of what I like and dislike. That said, I do worry about what I would call the Twitter effect, where there's three or four people that are super, super loud. And then everybody's like, whoa, 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 wait a second. Like, the whole audience is saying this. And you're like, no, it's three or four people that are really loud that have hijacked the conversation.
Right.
And, you know, when those three or four people, and because I've been on the receiving end, are sending you things about how you're a horrible human because you've done something that they don't like in their fandom,
right,
it does feel like the whole world is out to get you and it feels like against you. But I think, you know, one of the things that we try to do is not just connect with those three or four very vocal people, but I think you have to find, like, there's the vast majority of people that, you know, really care, but might not say anything, right? They might not.
Right.
You know, they might not feel comfortable voicing their opinion, but just in front in a public forum. A lot of people are like that. You know, I'm not going to talk about the silent majority, right? It's not quite like that. But there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of opinions that just, you know, you have to ask them. You can't just listen. So I think I do worry sometimes about by making those committees to super fans that you're given even a bigger platform to those three or four very vocal people.
Yeah, and I guess I would worry too that, okay, so now we're trying to please this guy and this person, and now we're, you know, we've seen this movie before where it just becomes so bland because you're trying to prove please everyone. But you guys have these, you know, these really singular driven stories, and that's why I think so many people are drawn to them.
You know, one of the things that happens, right, you know, one of the things that happens in The Walking Dead that I think is critical to its success is that we kill characters off, right?
Right.
And, you know, one of the rules that we had in the show was, and Robert had in the comic, was you can't really just kill somebody until you care about them.
Mm.
Because otherwise their death was kind of meaningless in terms of the show. And we never wanted to be like, oh, let's play up this character, then kill them, right? Like, it's not about that. That's obvious and trite, but the goal was if you had to have it had to hurt if when that character was written off the show. And so each time that we did that, we would get nasty letters and tons of people and tons of grief,
right?
And here's the trick, and this is the trick, right? If we listen to the fans in that specific instance where they basically said, we're not going to kill any of the characters that you love. You know what? Then the show becomes boring.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not what they're there for.
Yeah.
And so you have to balance, I believe, and I think this is sort of where a lot of storytellers run into problems with sort of corporate apparatuses where you have to say, hey, apparatuses?
Sure.
Not sure. Let's go with that. They still have to tell their story, right? And the job of the corporation that's helping them get out there is to preserve what's great about it. The engagement with the fans, from my point of view, should be that there's a platform to discuss what happened, influence what type of products are made, but the story needs to be in the hands of the creator, right? Because otherwise, if you tell stories by committee, they're bland, right? Mm-hmm. But I've fallen prey to this. I've tried this myself. It doesn't work, right? Yeah. If you sand off all the rough edges, it's smooth and boring, and that doesn't work. So we need to make sure that we preserve the thing that's edgy about the product itself. So, you know, speaking about these deaths, this was great. So for the sixth season premiere, we actually played Madison Square Garden, right? So we took over the entire Madison Square Garden. So this is like, I'm a New Yorker, right? I grew up as a longtime suffering Knicks fan. So going to Madison Square Garden and like playing Madison Square Garden was like one of the highlights of my life.
Yeah,
so
wow.
We go there, I got to speak, like it was amazing. But we go there, and when Robert came out, he was talking about, he was asked a question about killing characters, and some of the audiences would sort of groan when he talked about it. He's like, oh, you don't like that? Oh, you don't like that? I'll name your favorite character. I'll kill him. And then he became like this WWE, like a villain. And he's like, oh, who's that? You want me to kill them? Bring it louder. And it was, and what was great was the audience like totally got into it.
Yeah.
And, like there was like this raucous engagement with him.
Yeah.
Like, 20,000 people sort of, like, you know, screaming like, no, don't kill him. That's so good.
That is so great. I love that. Oh my God. Well, so your company Skybound, you know, looking around, reading about it, looking right there on your website. I love this. The Wheel of Awesome that you guys talk about, which is comics, games, TV series, film, audio series, or all of the above. Can you talk a little bit about how the Wheel of Awesome plays into your corporate lifestyle?
Yeah, so much of the way that what we've done is a reaction to the way things were, right? So it used to be you'd make a movie and then you'd have the primary exploitation, and I use the word exploitation specifically, and then you would have ancillary exploitation, right? And we always thought that was terrible because it would be, you'd have this movie that you loved, and then you basically get a lesser and lesser version, whether it's the video game, the comic, or whatever. It all felt very derivative. But for us, we're like, no, each one of these things can be the first time that a fan finds this particular story, right? So if your first encounter with The Walking Dead is a terrible video game, you're probably not going to go read the comics or watch the show or you know, buy the wine. But if your first experience is like, hey, I read this comic like rocked my world, oh, I'm probably going to go watch the show, I'm going to go play the video games, right? So each thing we always say is you never know where you're going to find your fan, right? So you have to always come, everything is primary. Every exploitation is primary. Every commercialization is primary. So that's part one. Two, in this day and age, when I watch the way that my kids and their friends engage with something, the second, it's all here. Everything's here, right? So they go from watching the show, they're blogging about it and talking and chatting with their friends, right? They then want to listen to the podcast that's discuss and dissects. They're going instantly. And when we finish something, you know, like I took my kids to Wild Robots and they're like, well, where's the second one? I'm like, it just came out. And like, they're like, where's the game? Where's this? And like, that's, I think, you know, what's interesting is it's funny because I think it's amusing, but it's also, I think it's to save the world. So you have to give their, grabbing a fan's attention.
Yeah.
You have to give them what they want. Otherwise, there's too much stuff in this day and age. They're going to move on to something else. So for us, the goal is we want to find a story that you love. For us, everything starts with story. We want to find a story that you love and that you want to spend time and immerse in that world. And once you're there, we want you to participate and tell us where you want this world to go and what sort of products you want in this world and what experiences, and build it so that there's a community engaging in and around the storytelling.
That I love all that, and it gave me a flashback to back a million years ago when we started to say, wait, people are watching TV, but then they're also looking at their phones. There's a second screen.
Yep. Like,
holy shit. You know, like, unbelievable how fast things change. Crazy. So you've got there's more Walking Dead. There's more new Walking Dead. Where could people, we know where we could see, we mentioned Netflix. We could see, you know, back seasons there. Where are we looking for new stuff?
So one of the things we've been doing is we've been taking, so the comic started out as a black and white comic and the most successful independent comic of all time. We've been taking that black and white comic and re-releasing it in what we call Walking Dead Deluxe, where we color the comic. So people are going back and rediscovering, sort of like, you know, like almost like a remaster of that. We're working on a number of different Walking Dead video games that will be coming out as sort of like new experiences to sort of expand and extend the world. There's new seasons of different derivative shows of the Walking Dead. Those are all on AMC. But we're out there sort of building, you know, sort of bigger and more Walking Dead experiences. And that's one of the things that's been great is that that's given us also the ability to launch new worlds, right? So we have a show that's on Amazon called Invincible. That's that was the number one show in 110 countries around the world.
Yeah,
we're working on seasons. Season three comes out next year, and we're already in works on seasons 4 and 5, which is really exciting for us. And we're working on a number of different Invincible games and sort of applying the Wheel of Awesome, just like we've done with The Walking Dead. Doing the same thing with Invincible and seeing the success there is really resonating. And then, you know, sort of behind that, we launched a podcast on Audible that was the number one podcast across all Amazon fiction called Impact Winter. We've done a comic book now based on that podcast,
wow.
The Vampire Apocalypse. And we had a soundtrack that we've released. We've done multiple seasons of that, and we're now going to be working on additional adaptations of Impact Winter.
Man, you guys, one, you seem to be lazy, and two, you keep missing the boat. You keep wow, that all sounds incredible, and I'm like making a mental list of all the things I need to listen to and read now. You've mentioned wine and bourbon a couple of times on this call. What is a Walking Dead approved cocktail or drink that you would say when a new episode comes on, or an old one that you're rewatching? Can you give us a suggestion?
So at Skybound, we have a Skybound Old Fashioned that we make. So I would say an Old Fashioned is a great accompaniment to any one of our pieces of fine entertainment. But love an Old Fashioned, so we do that. But we support the bourbon industry. We like that. We actually have a bar on the roof of our office called the Flying Squirrel. So, you know, next time if you're in LA, come out, have a drink, have an old fashioned with us at the Flying Squirrel.
I'm booking my ticket as we speak. Well, hey, DA, so great talking to you.
Thank you
so much for sharing your thoughts and sharing your creativity with us all. We can all use the entertainment, that's for sure.
I really appreciate it. It's been an honor to be on the show.
Once again, a big thank you to DA and a thank you to you for listening. If you like this episode, please subscribe because there's way more to come. And if you want to see my smiling face as I talk to these amazing guests, check us out on YouTube. That's Entrepreneur Magazine's YouTube channel. You can see and hear this show. How lucky are you?